Hello and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and today I'm especially excited because we have joining us the final member of the winning VTC team, one David Bergstrom. Hello, David.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
You betcha. So, David, to start off, can you tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So, Dave Bergstrom from Minnesota. I've been playing War Machine for probably about 10 plus years at this point. Really started heavy in Legion, played that all through Mark II. When we got into Mark III, I've been switching pretty frequently. So Circle, Menos, Infernals, now I'm on Rhett. Just kind of branching out there, getting to some of the bigger events, having a good time, and doing pretty well. So yeah, that's me.
All right. Well, so for the VTC, you took Retribution, obviously. What were the two lists that you took?
I took a Falseer Shadows and a Gorshade Defenders.
Okay. And that was Gorshade 4, obviously, in Rhett. Real quick, before we dive into the Patreon questions, from Discount Games, Inc., the tournament page is now live, including the ATC lists that we're going to be talking about. You can access it at the front page, or it's at discountgamesinc.com/tournaments. And then we'll have this episode. We'll be about 45-50 minutes chatting with each other, and then we'll have a bonus episode for people who subscribe to the Patreon. So here are some of the questions that we have from the Patreon's supporters. The first ones are from Bennett. He says, how to win Rhett?
Oh. one list with double tridents and Falseer or Assyria, and then another list that does something completely different. Could be an infantry skew, could be a jack skew, something along those lines. But generally, that's what I've found to be the most successful.
Okay, so his follow-up is how to kill all humans.
Tridents. 100% tridents.
Okay. Squishy little humans dying to tridents. That's fair enough.
100%.
His next question is, now that the warm-up is done, let's get right to the hottest topic, Falseer. So I've only got one game into her, and she terrifies me with her personal bully potential plus powerful control and or damage amplification effects via bounties. What's your take on her? Does she need to be reined in, or is she okay as is?
So coming from a Rhett player, someone that probably has 20 games of Falseer, I think she's fine as is. She is very strong. That's absolutely a given. She does quite a few things very, very well. Specifically, as they mentioned, her personal assassination range is pretty extreme. I think people overestimate that quite a bit. I think it's not as sure an assassination. She does need the rest of her army to also be able to get in and do some work as well. And generally, I find that if you shoot Falseer out there 17 to 19 inches, she generally doesn't get the job done and then just dies the next turn. So that's kind of the piece that reins her in a little bit. She tends to not actually contribute very much turn to turn and just kind of holds that threat range. And it's very difficult to actually pull the trigger and get a high odds assassination.
His follow-up question is, please give us some tips to play into Falseer.
Sure. If you're playing Hordes, camp 3 to 4 focus every turn. That'll largely completely take her assassination run off the table. Avoid playing things with a single Gargantuan or a single Colossal into her. Those are things that with a combination of like a Bounty or a Gorgon, she can completely remove from the game. And then the more units you can bring, the more solos you can bring, the more small units, things along those lines, the harder it is for her to actively apply her bounty tokens. And then the biggest thing that I would say that you want to prevent more than anything is if you can prevent Falseer from coming up and killing something, applying more bounty tokens and then cycloning backwards like a pseudo sprint ability. If you can prevent that, you'll be in a pretty good place, because that'll greatly reduce what she's able to do with her offensive and defensive bounties.
So his follow up, his next question is, second hot topic for the day, Tridents. Attending the Cost Tide of Skulls event, shout out and thanks to Nova for amazing organization and event, I see that red is not only the most played faction, but double tridents really seem to be in vogue. 31 tridents over both pods of players, 13 ret in total. Supreme Guardians Trail in second with only 10 entries over 5 players. Does this say something to you about their power level?
Trident's power level is over the top. There's opportunities to rein them in, changing the number of power tokens they can generate, taking away things like shooting gallery and things like that. I personally play two with Valseer because they're the best gun platforms in the faction with a slam, and they're also just happen to be armor 20. I think they're over the top. I think there's a couple very easy knobs that Privateer Press could turn to rein them in a little bit. But yeah, that's kind of where I stand on Tridents. I'm not surprised at the high number, and I'm definitely not surprised when people get a little bit disturbed playing into them. They are very, very aggressively costed at 16 points.
His follow-up is kind of in line to what you were already talking about a little bit, but do they need adjusted somehow, and if so, how?
Easiest thing would be to take their power up D3 and just change it to power up just D1 or just 1. The other thing you could really do is you could look at shooting gallery. Trident probably doesn't need to be rat 8 and have a boostable mechanic. Third thing they could do, you know, you could look at smite on the melee attack. You could make that crit smite. That would be a pretty good nerf to it. Or you could just make it 17 points. I mean, there's a lot of different options that you could go with. I would say probably one of those would take it from, you know, best battle engine out there to, you know, right in line with a lot of the other powerful ones. So just one light nerf in any one of those areas, I think, would be just fine.
And his final Trident questions is, any tips for playing versus Tridents?
Yeah, so anything you can do to mitigate the shooting of a Trident is huge. So they're always going to be the most impactful when they can charge something, slam it, and then shoot pretty much everything else that they can see. So good ways to do this are if you have access to a TK caster and you can turn them around, they lose the shield armor benefit. They go down to defense 10. They're a lot more manageable for your opponent to kill. Things like Windstorm from Kruger, which just makes them base range 5 on their guns. And then anything that can shut off their shooting at all. So Blinding Light, any type of a spell or ability like that. Specifically in Rhett, things like Felseer's Confuse Bounty work very well. Makes a rat 4 range 7. So really anything that can disrupt the shooting, and then anything TK related that can move it around or turn it around so it can't charge or it loses its shield benefit are going to be huge.
So Benup's next question is, how are the themes looking these days?
In Rhett, they look fantastic. So coming from Menoth or Infernals or Circle. So Menoth is Faithful Masses all day, every day, with a little bit of Warriors of Old Faith. Infernals was largely Dark Legacy, and you know, Circle's largely Secret Masters these days. In Rhett, you have 3 factions that you can play all day, every day, with very, very few issues. So Shadows, very good. I'm still looking at quite a few casters in Shadows. Just the combination of the Void Archons, all the updated infantry out of the CID, all the updated Warjacks. I think there's a ton of options there that you can build to. Then you have Forges, one of the best anti-gunline themes in the game. Everything in the list usually has Force Barrier. It has armor, extra armor to guns, shield guards everywhere. Just a super strong theme in general. And then you kind of get to, I would call it the best theme in Rhett, which is Defenders. it just has everything. It's got all of the pieces that you would want. It's got some of the best infantry in the game. It's got some of the best solos in the game. And on top of that, it has access to double tridents. So it is all three of those. I mean, Rhett's just in a fantastic spot just due to the amount of options that it has right now.
So I guess I'd like to talk a little bit about Shadows in particular. It's what you took Falseer in. There was a time where when the Great Theme Apocalypse came upon us that a lot of people were pretty upset with the state of Shadows at that time. What changed and why do you feel it's now more of a viable option?
Yeah, so I took Shadows with Falseer. Granted, Falseer takes every red theme and makes it look very good. Mm-hmm. I think she specifically combos with Shadows very well. It's the combination of, you know, updated Mage Hunter Strike Force, so they have access to Dispel now. The updated Mage Hunter Infiltrators that just have straight ambush. New Iris that just makes the whole list just kind of insanely accurate. You know, the Void Archons to hand out armor debuffs as needed. So in the VTC, my Falseer list was very much targeted into anything that was running, you know, a little bit of infantry and then Jax, just because it can just trivially just remove those. Turn two, one of my opponents put a Vulcan. He just moved it out of his deployment zone and, a bounty token and two units of Mage Hunter Strike Force were able to just shoot it off the table. So, I mean, it's to that level where it can be that skewy into certain lists. And also with all of the AD and ambush in the list, it has a huge amount of just pressure on your opponent immediately. The Mage Hunter Infiltrators the Strike Force are fantastic because they can get all the way up the board. And then if your opponent tries to skirmish with their infantry, they just shoot them to death and repo backwards. The infiltrators can come off a side and just claim a zone for the entire game. If you stack buffs, they can come in at POW 16. They can combo strike, I think it's POW 15, and then they can combo strike up to almost POW 18 in the list. So it's really just that kind of pressure that I like out of Shadows more than anything. And it also will just threaten casters from across the board. And just give you those lanes as well.
So the next question he has is, are the Dawn Guard, aside from the obvious Trident, as bad as the Rhett community perceives them to be in terms of units and theme?
Yeah, I'm going to try and answer this diplomatically. They are not bad models by any stretch, but compared to Defenders and Shadows, the infantry is overcosted and understated. The theme benefits aren't amazing for actually going into it. So yeah, right now there's really no reason to play Dawn Guard at all. Invictor's really cool unit, really solid UA, but it costs more than a Trident, and a Trident does about the same thing. Sentinels, really cool unit. But Risavas defenders are cheaper, hit as hard or harder in a lot of lists, and threat farther. So it's just difficult to justify playing that theme right now.
Yeah, there was a I have like mounds of Dawn Guard, and it just kind of feels like if I were to put them on the table right now, I'd mostly spend most of the game just like removing my models from the table and that would be the game.
Yeah, I completely agree. They're, you know, I'm looking at the Sentinels card right now. I mean, it's 18 for a full unit. It's 3 points more than Risavas defenders that come in with tough, no knockdown weapon masters that threat further. I'm really struggling to find a reason to play in Dawn Guard right now. It's tough.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll get another looking at. I know they've had kind of a quasi CID. I don't remember if it was an actual CID or a dynamic update in the past. They could definitely use another pass through. I'm just not sure that we'll get that anytime soon, just due to the Shadows one coming out recently.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's, you know, so many other factions that need that's so much more that it's a little bit difficult to justify.
Yeah, I can't justify it. I mean, Red has three great factions, so I'll just be happy with where I'm at right now.
All right, so the next question from Benep is, how did Gorshade 4 work out in your pairing? Did he work out covering what Falseer couldn't?
Yeah, definitely. So Gorshade is built almost the exact opposite of Falseer. So Falseer, you like to see gun lines. You like to see things that can take a lot of shots, really abuse the prey token. A lot of kind of moving pieces, anything with repo, things like that. Gorshade is the exact opposite to that in every way. It's really just, I have this many dudes coming at you. Every time you kill one, I'm going to hit you back. And if you need to kill them all, otherwise you're going to lose on scenario. So it really gave me that entirely other list, the kind of the super sticky list that if I didn't want to play a whole bunch of, Mage Hunter infantry that's going to die to random blasts and things like that, I can just kind of toss Gorshade up there. All of his infantry, for the most part, is also immune to blast damage. So he covered those holes pretty darn well. My pairing for VTC did have a few holes. I really didn't want to see Legion. I didn't really want to see Thamorite Archons for the most part. But that was pretty much all I wanted to dodge. And I was, through the team pairing process, I was able to engineer my way out of that, except round one where I hopped on a hand grenade for the team. So, but yeah, Gorshade absolutely covers, kind of an Assyria or a Falseer gun line. You know, what they don't want to see is absolutely what Gorshade would want to see.
So would you say that with the pairing that you have, that Falseer was kind of a primary caster with Gorshade shoring up weaknesses, or are they a little bit more 50-50 in what you were doing with matchups?
So it's just a play style kind of thing. It's actually reversed. So Gorshade is my primary.
Okay.
And Falseer is kind of my just scare people list more than anything. I absolutely love grinding out long games. That is where I thrive. That's kind of where I get a lot of my wins, is I can play my first couple turns pretty quickly. And if my opponent takes a little bit too much time on turns 1 through 3, they're just not going to be able to close out the game versus Gorshade. So that's kind of my style. That's how I like to play. And so that's why Gorshade is my primary.
All right. So what, I guess, can you dive in a little bit deeper on Gorshade, on what was in your list and what you were, how your average game would play out, stuff like that, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will start off with, I'm going to start off by saying the VTC didn't allow the House Elowir Wardens or the Executioners, so my list has changed a little bit since then. But right now it's Gorshade, a Manticore, 2 Chimeras, 2 full units of Defenders, a full unit of Wardens, and then a pretty solid solo package. So that being, you have Scythe, a Nis Priest, Aelith, 2 Executioners, and then the Hermit, and then also Lanissa, and then, I believe in a Mechanic as well. And the list just plays very much, get as close and into the scenario as possible. Don't give away your defenders for free. Make sure they're always base to base. Make sure they're always tough, no knockdown. The wardens generally will come up right up the center with Gorshade's armor debuff, which gives them tough. And then I missed one, so there's a Lys healer in there to also make them tough, no knockdown. So what I really like to do is 3 units of tough, no knockdown infantry. They're going to hit like trucks as soon as you walk into their threat range. And then it's really how many can you kill before I basically swarm you, and then Gorshade feats. So if you kill any of them, it's auto stationary. And then, you know, anything that, you know, punches a Risavas or killed a warden just auto-dies on the next turn just due to all the weapon masters running around. And then making sure that the jacks are spread out between the three units to really capitalize on Gorshade's Arcane Vortex.
Okay, so the next question from Bennett, this is the final one. He says, is K Bay?
I just can't get behind that. Sorry. she's just not for me. Nope, sorry, just can't do K.
What is it about her that you haven't liked?
I would say she's very much an old design. You know, not super dynamic, not a lot of things going on with her, and not a lot of tricks. So, I mean, it's very just, here's what my list does. If you can counter it, or if you have a way around it, I lose. And that's the other thing I would say is her feat. It gives friendly faction models stealth, and there's just so many ways around that feat at this point. You know, with the eyeless sight objective, and all of a sudden, you know, your opponent's colossal can just continue to shoot and maul up your army. So it just feels like she's probably like 3 or 4 years too old at this point. You know, maybe a good, you know, dynamic update would make her a little bit more appealing. But at this point, yeah, she just would never crack my pairing.
All right. So Zemo is cool. Has some questions for you. He says, last time I looked at Retribution pre-pandemic, Gareth II was the dominant caster in the faction, and I want to say in the game. Now it seems like barely anyone is talking about him. Why has Gareth II fallen so far out of favor? Is it all the release of Falseer, or was there something else?
Ooh, that's a great question. He is still extremely good. You can absolutely take almost a carbon copy of his old list, the three battle engines, some harpies, and then some units, and go out there and just do fantastic with it. I think personally for me, I think Falseer, like, I would say Gareth 2 is like an A. Falseer is like an A plus, S minus, somewhere in that range type of caster. You just get a little bit more power out of Falseer. But honestly, Gareth's still fantastic. He's one of my favorite to play. I think the only reason he's disappeared right now is just because Falseer came out and they kind of have the same gun line type of list.
It is kind of interesting that Rhett has received two casters in somewhat recent history that have been kind of so strong and had such a big impact on the meta.
Yeah, it's very strange. A few locals around here kind of have the design intent, or they kind of have the philosophy that Rhett had really good models, and then its casters were always kind of mediocre in the past. So it's been really exciting to take all the good models in Rhett and then pair them with like really good CID casters. I think we're just seeing the results of kind of how powerful that is.
So the next question from Zemo is cool. He says, what are your thoughts on the House Guard Halberdiers? Are they any good, or do they need some help?
I don't take them in any of my pairings. They definitely need some help for sure. What I would say is they're coming in at 14 points for the max units. For another point, you get Risavas Defenders, which are weapon masters, same speed, more survivable. I mean, it's a tough sell.
His follow-up question is, that is there any caster list that you can play them in with bonus points for a list with two units, because I bought a second one, laugh out loud.
I'm going to struggle on this one a little bit. A couple years ago when they used to have Advanced Move, they were very, very strong. They've since lost that, so it's a little bit tougher. I really want to say your best bet is probably Gorshade, just to get volume of bodies. He does a decent job protecting them on high terrain boards. You can hand them out ghostly, which kind of fixes their lack of Pathfinder issue. So that's probably your best bet, would be two units with Gorshade. My concern would just be, you know, for one or two more points, you can probably just get better units. But if you had to play them, I would start there.
All right, so Mistwalker 816 says, please share why you like Falseer in Shadows. What does that build look like?
Yeah, so my Falseer's build was it was two units of Min, Mage Hunter, and Mage Hunter. Oh goodness, the ranged ones. A Min unit of infiltrators. Strike Force. There we go. A Gorgon, a Daemon, two Void Archons, and then solos to taste. I also had a Lara and a Gorgon in there. So just to make sure everyone is aware of Falseer, she is very, very strong at buffing pretty much anything in the faction. The thing she does specifically for Shadows is all the Mage Hunters are generally defense 14. So they take Falter Courage very well. They take Confuse very well. So you can engineer situations where your opponent really can't crack back after they've been hit because their defense will be so high. The Void Archons plus a Prey Upon Bounty plus damage rerolls allow for some pretty crazy swings. Really allows you to take some models off that your opponent wasn't expecting. The Strike Force has Dispel now. They also have Blessed. Very strong abilities. People can place their Warjacks a little bit too close with deceleration or something like that, not realizing that they'll shoot off most of the Warjacks. The Banshee and the Daemon, they're there basically to move stuff around for Falseer. It makes your opponent consider quite a bit. Okay, so the Daemon has two Vortex gunshots, so he can drag people in multiple directions. The Banshee has just a slam gun, just on its card in general. So there's a lot of different pieces that your opponent needs to consider. If you can ever slam a model into their caster, there's a good chance Falseer can get onto it and just basically murder it. The Alara and Gorgon is just a really good Falseer tech in general. It's got the spray for -2 speed. You can buy that with a bounty for another -2 speed. So if your opponent's playing a Colossal, you can get it down to speed 1 really easily. If they're playing like a Victor, it goes down to speed 0. And it's basically stuck in place if it wants to shoot or attack or anything else. So it's those kind of tricks that I really enjoy out of the Shadows package.
So Dragon Pup, his questions are, aside from the Elite Four, Asyria, Falseer, Gareth II, Gorshade, what other casters do you think have potential that often get overlooked? Who's close to great, who's fun, and who's lacking?
All right, let's start off with close to great then. So let's go with Gareth I. Gareth I does a lot. He has a lot of very good spells on his card. There was a little consternation in the CID that he got Crippling Grasp and not a great way to apply it. I think in Defenders you get a combination of Hermit Telemetry and then Silas Signs Importance to make that Crippling Grasp very, very accurate, even though he's only Magic Ability 6. So that's a big one right there. I think he has a lot more potential, and I think Falseer is just overshadowing him a little bit. But I think he's definitely right on the cusp of breaking into that four. The other things that he does is, I believe he has a Threat Extender and then also an Armor buff as well. So he is very good at, you know, give him a Trident, give him two units of infantry, give him some support solos, and then just let his army get up until they have to commit their caster, or you get close enough to their caster, and then just unleash Gareth's assassination run on them. Pretty consistent assassination run, so I really like Gary 1 for sure. I would say the only other one that I'd really put in that like cusp to being playable would be Thyrin. He is close. I've seen him on the table multiple times. My issue with him is he does a few things very, very, very well, but if your opponent knows what's coming and they're practiced at avoiding those things, he ends up generally looking a little a little mopey. He doesn't really protect his army very well. He doesn't really give any threat extenders. But when his army gets to you, it hits like an absolute truck, and it'll keep hitting, and it has a tendency to just kill everything on the table. So he's right on that cusp as well. I would have loved to seen maybe one different spell on his card that would have been probably pretty good. Dropping down from right on the cusp tier to playable tier, I'm going to go with Ossian here for sure. Ossian, you know, his card just has a bunch of fantastic spells, a very good damage feat. He tends to get murdered with it, but it's pretty good. Alara, too, still got a lot of tricks. Still got a fantastic feat, damage buff. Definitely got some game. Raven, I think, is kind of an outsider, would definitely have some game as well. I've seen some lists with her. I like her quite a bit. And then Virus 1 and 2, I think you could build both of those to be in that playable tier. And then below that are casters that I'm not really too high on. The biggest one would probably be kind of the biggest thing I'd put there that might be most controversial would be the new Helena. She just doesn't really do much of anything, so I'm not a huge fan there. And then, you know, people like Ron and that's probably the only two left would be Ron and Helena, which I and Kayla. So those would be the three that I just really wouldn't consider.
Dragon Pup's next question is, if you were given the chance to make a Rhett solo or unit attachment, what would it look like?
Great question. It would be in Defenders. It would be Nis-based. I'm not sure what it... Oh, I think it would be a Desperate Pace unit for Nis. Just be something to be able to hand out Desperate Pace to the Defenders and then any other Nis solos as well. I think that's where I would go. I think that's probably the one piece that's missing. They're very, very static in their threat ranges, so it would be either some sort of Desperate Pace or maybe something that could hand off Vengeance, although Vengeance is kind of everywhere, or maybe just a command attachment that gave something like No Quarter once a game. I think that's where I'd start.
So the final question from Dragon Pup, he says, how far behind the curve do you feel Legions of Dawn is compared to the other themes? What is it lacking?
Yeah, like we hit on a little earlier, the infantry, it's overcosted and understated. Out of the four themes, it's definitely the lowest, probably by a pretty good margin. Costs would need to go down, stats would need to go up to really make it viable. Theme benefits, you'd probably want to take a look at those. Right now, there's really nothing that would really draw me to that. It's pretty below the curve. I just don't see really much that would be powerful enough for me to take that.
All right, so the next question from Jacob. Actually, let's go with Tokenator first. He says, double Ghost Snipers, compulsory Rhett's requisition slot in Defenders, good rec slot or avoid?
Good rec slot. Definitely not compulsory. Really depends on what your list is going to try and do. They are super good. They're one of the few models out there that can just trivially remove the Hermit. They are, you know, range 14, deadly shot, finish off heavies. I used to take them quite a bit in Defenders. I've since switched over to a Warden Executioner, although I might switch back just because the Executioners they've been good but not great. So there's a real chance that the Ghost Snipers start making their way back into my list.
So Tokenator's next question is, do Wardens, the unit not the solo, have a space in your lists? Which caster/support models make Wardens shine?
Yeah, so Wardens for me are definitely in my Gorshade list. He's got the plus 3 armor, which puts him up to armor 21 against range, 23 against melee, and then also tough, throwing a list healer that's tough, no knockdown. Very powerful pieces then. Largely requires a huge amount of work from your opponent to take them down. And then Gorshade being Gorshade, if you have the extra focus, you can actually revive them back as well. So you can be reviving armor 23 guys back once a heavy warjack punches it. So very powerful option there. I would say in particular, the casters that make them shine would be already hit on Gorshade. Assyria, Crusader's Call, speed buff, also an armor buff, very strong. Gareth 1, once again, armor buff. Can also put Mirage as needed to give them a mini threat extender, so also very strong. What you'd be looking for is something that buffs their armor to increase their survivability, and then also anything that would speed them up to let them go a little bit further than at 11. Things I would avoid are specifically trying to put them in places where you jack up their damage. They're already POW 15. They already hit really, really hard. I think you can probably avoid that. Like, I don't think Thyrin needs them at all. They're just not going to be great there. But anything that can bump up their survivability is going to make them shine.
Next question from Tokenator. He says, during the CID, people were doomsaying about quadruple warden executioners, but so far that doom seems to have been averted. Do you see Warden Solos as a 4 of, a 2 of, or not as interesting as other solo choices?
Yeah, so Rhett, specifically in Defenders, has just a plethora of rec spot choices. And then also the solo slot just becomes pretty jammed up pretty quickly. I generally run 2. I might drop that down to 1. So you have Scythe. You have Executioners, you have Double Ghost Snipers. So usually those 3, some combination, is going to be my 3 rec slots. The only place that I'm actively seeing 4 or playing 4 is Assyria. And that's just because she has Crusader's Call and then also a pretty good feed for them as well. Volume of attacks are always what Assyria is going to want. So if you can get 4 Executioners, 2 Tridents, it's just a huge volume of shots and attacks going out in one turn. So that's probably the only place that they might be getting close to kind of abusable. But beyond that, I think they're just solid combat solos. I don't think they're over the top. I think they're just fine.
All right. So this will be the final question of this episode. Tokenator says, Falseer Mirror with identical lists. Does that mean that the players deserve each other?
I think absolutely. Yep. 100%.
Fair enough. All right. So, as always, check out discountgamesinc.com for your gaming purchases, Muse on Minis for your accessories. And I wanted to thank the patrons of the podcast for supporting it. And finally, David, wanted to thank you for sharing your time and sharing your knowledge.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You bet. So stay tuned for the bonus episode where we will continue this conversation.